Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
The one who never leaves the box waits in the 2-0 pitch, and he swings! High drive! Left field! It is out of here! Welcome to the big leagues. Jay Wong and the Giants take the lead.
They swept Colorado. Colorado's lost eight in a row now. Mike Kruko with a call last night on the Giants television network. That Giants network consistently gets very, very high ratings for their broadcast team. You can tell why. I mean, every time we play a cut, I know it's a highlight, but they sound great. College football is much closer to starting than people realize. Again, if you have a game that is August 31st, and there will be several opening night games on the 31st of August, you're allowed to start that Thursday. Your training camp starts at the end of July. So when you hear SEC Media Days, July 10th to the 13th, they aren't that far from starting camp. It's amazing. That's how close everything is now. I mean, look, we're at the point where we're 2 months from Saturday to starting Penn State Akron at Beaver Stadium, and we get to tomorrow's the end of the first half of the year. For some, it's a critical end of the fiscal year. Who might that be? All right, and you've got what, 62, 63 days. 9 weeks? 63 days, 9 weeks to the opener as of Saturday. That's how close it is. Now, between now and then, there's Live for Life. Live for Life is just 2 weeks away. Now, I'm sure they'll get some idiot to MC it. Wait a minute. And it's going to be in Huluba Hall this year. It's going to be inside in Huluba Hall this year. Live for Life. It's going to be on Saturday, July 15th. So if you happen to be coming in for the Arts Festival, kind of given up a little bit on the Arts Festival, you know, for years and years, to be honest with you, Sean, I looked for what I thought would be a centerpiece for the man cave.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs smoking cigars while playing poker. Haven't found it downtown.
That's perfect. Yes.
Now,
maybe that's at People's Choice over in Bowlesburg. Man, they got it over there.
At a Waffle House. At a Waffle House down in South Carolina, they seem to have an abundance of them. But downtown, no. There's just one big shutout. I was like, oh. I was like, oh, God. I would have settled for dogs smoking cigars while playing poker.
Timeless.
You know, I think the Beagle's cheating. But then again, you can glorify Rudy being offsides. I'm just telling you. Doggone Rudy. Rudy was offsides. Now, the next round of, if there is one, if there is another round of conference realignment, you will have some people that will it, let's see, that we'll see how it plays out, that the conference most vulnerable is the Big 12. There will be some people that will say you need four super conferences. It came up the last time we had conference realignment. Is everybody headed toward four super conferences? Was the Pac-12 going to get Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Texas, and I think it was Texas Tech, where they were going to get those four and get the 16? It never did happen. The ACC, since then, the ACC also looked rather vulnerable at that time. Remember, Maryland left the ACC to go to the Big Ten. And the ACC bounced right back to its credit. They ended up tearing apart the Big East in the end. But they were able to get Louisville, Syracuse, and Pitt to join the ACC. And, of course, in 2012, BC had already left the Big East for the ACC. And then they also picked up Notre Dame for the basketball and Olympic sports. And in football, Notre Dame plays five ACC teams per year, and they have it scheduled out through 2037 now as to which ACC teams play when and where. So that's but Texas going to be will be attractive to anybody, with one exception. The Longhorn Network is a big problem. That is a big problem. It has always driven a wedge. It has always driven a wedge between Texas and the other Big 12 members. It then becomes a problem for everyone else in their ability to say, let's bring them on board. They don't want to give up any of the revenue or exposure they get from the Longhorn Network. They don't want to do it. And that's a big issue. It's a big issue. But Texas is still going to be attractive. One gets the impression, though, that the SEC really would not be an option that they're crazy about, but maybe the ACC or the Pac-12 could be. And, of course, everyone will ask about, you know, what about the Big Ten? Then there's Oklahoma. Oklahoma, same thing. They bring with them to the table their football is going to be attractive. Their basketball is good. Oklahoma City, of course, would be the market they would bring with them. Same thing. What would happen with them? Big Ten, Pac-12. But here's the part with Oklahoma that's the unknown. Would the Oklahoma State legislature say that you must take Oklahoma State too? In other words, they would prevent one from going unless the other went with them. Do they have that kind of power? So I don't know. That's a big unknown. Now, there are some other schools that don't have a lot of chips at the table. And that's a big problem. They don't have a lot of chips on the table. Let's talk about Iowa State. Okay? What does Iowa State bring to the table? There'll be plenty of fans in Iowa that are Hawkeye fans that would say, look, hey, bring them on board. Now, there's a reason they would want them brought on board. And that would be to eliminate that nuisance game of Iowa State that really ties the hands of Iowa and its non-conference schedule every year. I mean, Iowa's non-conference schedule is ripped every single year. And because they have no flexibility in their non-conference schedule because they're stuck with that Iowa State game every year. Well, if Iowa State's in the conference, it's not an issue. But they don't. But Iowa State would bring nothing to the conference. And let me explain what I mean by nothing to the conference. It's not competitively. It's not what I'm talking about. This is not about being competitive. You do want to bring good football, good basketball to the conference. Yes, you do. Because if you got some name recognition, that helps out. But part of what happens with the Big Ten Network is that if you are in the conference footprint, the price for the network in that region, while still being less than 50 cents per household, by the way, triples. It still would be under 50 cents, but the number, it's like 13 to 39 cents or something like that, or 14 to 42 cents, but it triples. Well, which households in Iowa does Iowa State bring that Iowa doesn't already have? They have them all. Remember when it was Penn State, when people were talking about the possibility of Pitt joining the Big Ten a few years ago? It's the same question. Which households does Pitt deliver that Penn State doesn't already deliver for the Big Ten? Which ones? Which ones? Name me an area like, hey, if we have Pitt, we'll get that house over there. No, you won't. Okay, you already have the homes in the state carrying the Big Ten Network. Not every cable system has it. I think the carriage here in the state is, what, 87%, 88%, something like that. So you don't have every single one of them. I can tell you right now, Pitt's not giving the last 12% for you. You're going to sit there and go, oh, Pitt's on. We better carry it now. It's not going to happen. It doesn't happen. It's not how it works. In terms of pure financial value, I don't mean competition. I do not mean competition. In terms of financial value, Rutgers brought millions of homes with them to the Big Ten Network they didn't have before, where the price tripled. Maryland brought millions of homes, price tripled. See, Pitt would not have brought a home with them that would change the financial balance in the conference. You notice that when the Big Ten has expanded the last four times out, the last four schools brought into the Big Ten, not one of them had been in a current Big Ten state. Pennsylvania, Nebraska, New Jersey, Maryland. Now, things have changed maybe a bit. The next contract through may be a bit different because cable, in conjunction with football, drove the last expansion. Cable systems, cable pricing drove the last expansion, with football being the chip that led the charge. Next time through in 2023, I don't know what's going to lead the charge. Is it Amazon? Is it Hulu? Is it Netflix? I don't know. And you don't know. It could be Twitter for all we know. I don't know. In 6 years. And I think I am brilliantly using foreign terms to me. So, Kansas just allocated to put a lot of money into their football facilities in their stadium. Are they trying to position themselves to be attractive to leave the Big 12 and go to someplace else, the Big 10, whatever? I mean, basketball is great at Kansas, but it's not enough of a chip to really give them a seat at the table. That tells you about the state of expansion. It's so football-driven that Kansas has this gigantic chip in great, great basketball. Not good, great basketball. And they sell out, and they're a name, and they're attractive, and that chip is not good enough to get them to the table. Football still drives it. Basketball is an awesome supplement financially. Kansas State football, they've been good. You know, they've had one or two great years. They've had one or two off years. So for the most part, the line, mostly under Bill Snyder, has been on the graph pretty straight across in the good level. Basketball with Bruce Weber, they're good. But again, if you have a choice between Kansas and Kansas State, which one do you take? You're not going to take both. You're not going to take both. Just like with the Oklahoma-Oklahoma State thing, you know, would you be forced to take both? Now, the Big Ten wouldn't take both, I don't think. Same thing with Kansas State. And what happens with those schools? Baylor. Right, what do you do with Baylor? With everything that's gone on at Baylor the last couple of years, I mean, do you sit in a room and go, oh, we need to get them? Even though they've made changes, even though they've made dramatic changes, it's still a little bit of like an eyebrow raise. Texas Tech. TCU. I don't think you sit there and go, you know, hey, we really need the Lubbock market. But you also don't have Texas either. So if you get a Texas Tech, would you be able to get cable outlets to carry Pac-12 network or the Big Ten network or the SEC network or the newly formed 2019 ACC network in the state? I don't know. But the Big 12 is unquestionably the single most vulnerable conference. That's the one that is going to be the bell cow as to whether we get the four power conferences or not. All right, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Imagine getting behind the wheel and looking forward to your journey ahead. If when you turned your car on, it did the same for you. Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury has the full 2017 Lincoln lineup ready to invigorate your driving experience with affordable American luxury. Well-qualified buyers can take advantage of $4,000 cash back and 0% for 72 months on the luxurious 2017 Lincoln Navigator. Or lease a new 2017 Lincoln MKX all-wheel drive for $363 per month for 36 months. Sunbury Motors Lincoln is your destination for affordable American luxury. Located in Sunbury in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and online at sunburylincoln.com. Financing with Lincoln AFS with approved credit. Lease based on stock number LB738, 10,000 miles per year and $3,900 total due at signing. Zero security deposit, tax and fees extra.
Offer ends 757.
Great to be with you. That the Big 12 in the next round is going to be the most vulnerable. I mean, they do have a 13-year contract, television-wise and so forth. They're the ones that imposed the original grant of rights. Ironically, you know what conference does not have a grant of rights? And the grant of rights, by the way, just so for the uninitiated. Now, you know, I always understand that, you know, I will use some terms from time to time that right away I know exactly what I'm talking about, despite what you may think. And maybe the audience will sit back and go, wait a minute, what does that mean? What you do is you sign over your television rights to the conference. And it goes to a period of time. So say, for example, you sign over your television rights through 2020 and you leave the conference in 2018. Well, the television money you get wherever still goes to the conference because you signed the grant of rights. That's what it means. Well, the grant of rights, the SEC doesn't have a grant of rights. Say, for example, let's just pick one. Say Missouri. Say the Big Ten wanted to pursue Missouri and bring Missouri into the Big Ten. Missouri, for whatever timetable, could do it without any worry about their media grant of rights staying with the SEC. Doesn't exist. Everybody else has one, including the Big Ten. But at some point, these all expire. They are not into infinity. And I think the Big 12s runs out in like 23 or 24. That's one of the reasons why Adam Rittenberg wrote that article that he did about about 2023 being a watershed year if people want to move. Now, for the moment, things are stable. I was content with the Big Ten staying at 12. I thought that worked out scheduling wise well. I liked, you know, I thought the addition of Nebraska was really good. But they went the next step to 14, which equaled the number that the SEC had. And, of course, they did add Maryland. And I like Maryland being in. Now, Rutgers, I like the proximity of Rutgers being in. I like the fact that there are Eastern teams to go with Penn State. I think that has been a plus. I think when Penn State fans can travel to Rutgers for a football game or a basketball game, I think that's great. I also think you'll find that there'll be plenty of Penn State fans Thanksgiving weekend going down to College Park. And by the way, you do need to take in a basketball game at some point at College Park. At the Xfinity Center, that is a wow. No offense to some great basketball venues in the Big Ten, but that's the best atmosphere basketball-wise in the Big Ten in College Park.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Talk about something in this half hour, which I think Sean will have a definite opinion on. Get to the sports bozo of the day. First of all, right, sports bozo of the day. And now, there's a little bit different take on this. The man who threw a beer at Orioles outfielder during a playoff game at Rogers Center has been sentenced to 200 hours of community service in order to stay away from a major league ballpark for 1 year. Ken Pagan received a conditional discharge, meaning he won't have a criminal record if he complies with the probation after he pleaded guilty to mischief last month. He threw a beer in the playoff game at the outfielder, Kim, of the Orioles. You know what? I think that is a very fair sentence. You know, that's a very fair sentence. Where he does 200 hours of community service, and then after a year, he's allowed to go back if he wants to watch a major league. No, it's we're going to give you a second chance. That emotion got in the way. Nobody got harmed or anything in this. So I want to. I'm sure the sentence had to be in Toronto, right? Very fair. So I give him a lot of credit for that. I don't know what you think about it, Sean.
That's more than fair for sure. I mean, that's like with the community service. That's almost like a month's worth of work for free. Could make a great impact doing that. And yeah, we all should deserve a second chance. Completely agree.
Now I want to talk about something that you'd have probably a fair amount of knowledge of. And that's Hillsboro. Again, for fans, what is Hillsboro? Well, first of all, let's give credit where credit is due. ESPN has the brilliant series 30 for 30. And I want to say 3 years ago they did this. I would strongly recommend you watching it. But the Hillsboro soccer tragedy here we are 28 years later. 28 years later, former police chiefs have been charged in the disaster that killed 96. There's no doubt that that day mistakes were made, but it's what they did afterward that is just appalling. Margaret Aspinall, leader of the family's campaign group, whose 18-year-old son James was among the dead, said, "It's about time. All these families, 28 years that we've had torture, really, it's been hell on earth. This is definitely the start of the end," she told reporters. "We all need peace from Hillsborough, but we can never have peace until we have truth, justice, and accountability." The most high profile among them is former police chief superintendent David Duckenfield. He was the person in charge of police operations at Hillsborough on the fateful day. He was charged with manslaughter by gross negligence of 95 men, women, and children. There was one person who died in a coma 3 years later. There's a reason why they can't charge him with that. Okay. Now, here's the part that the appalling part is that people died. Over 700 were hurt in this. They got crushed, is what happened. I mean, almost all of them died of asphyxiation. We'll explain how it happened to you. But, in fact, we'll tell you what happened, and we'll get to the reason why it is such an why the next part after the deaths is so appalling. Because, I mean, there is an incredible picture that John Dawes of the Star took, showing the people against the fencing being crushed, which is just, oh my goodness. All right, let's take you back to that day in 1989 as to how it happened, to give you some background and why 28 years later is significant that some people are going to trial. Okay. And I think that would be the best way to do it, with some sort of order. It's going to be a match between Nottingham Forest and Liverpool. Nottingham Forest, of course, has its following. I think everyone knows that has any semblance of sport understands that the Liverpool following is very large and very intense. So they're going to have this match at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that day. And the Hillsborough Football Stadium happens to be in Sheffield. And it was the semifinal matchup between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. What happened was there was such... They had what were called pens. And they were going to put the Nottingham Forest fans in the south pen and put the Liverpool fans in the north pen. Then there's neutral, you know, obviously in between. Okay. Well, these pens, they just load them up. No seating, they load them up in these pens. So all the, you know, so the Liverpool fans start showing up, you know, slowly but surely. It's a 3 o'clock match. They start showing up. And the three charter trains transported Liverpool supporters to Sheffield and then started getting ready for the match. Some supporters were delayed by road work, which resulted from with minor traffic congestion. Some were just not in a hurry to get there. So the Liverpool fans were actually late in getting there. Between 2:30 and 2:40, there was a buildup of supporters outside the turnstiles facing that north side, which is called Leppings Lane. And they were eager to enter the stadium before the match began. At 2:46, the BBC's football commentator, John Motson, had already noticed the imbalance of distribution of people in the Leppings Lane pens. While rehearsing for the match off-air, he suggested a nearby cameraman look as well. He said there were gaps, he says, in parts of the ground. Well, if you look at the Liverpool end to the right of the goal, there's hardly anybody on those steps. That's it. Look down there. Outside the stadium, a bottleneck had occurred because they only had seven turnstile areas where you go through one at a time to get into that area. So then they made the decision to help out, where they took an elephant door and they opened it up. But there's still just one entrance into the pens at that end. So a bottleneck developed with more fans arriving that could be safely filtered through the turnstiles before three. People presenting tickets at the wrong turnstiles and those who had been refused entry could not leave because the crowd behind them remained as an obstruction. Fans outside could hear cheering as the teams came onto the pitch 10 minutes before the match. Police constable radioed control requesting the game be delayed. Same as, and they'd done that before. 2 years ago, they'd done that before. And Duckenfield said no. They wanted to delay the match by 20 minutes. It was declined. An estimated 5,000 fans tried to enter through the turnstiles and increase the safety concerns. The police, to avoid fatalities outside the ground, opened the large gate. That's the elephant door, Gate C, that ordinarily permitted the free flow of supporters to actually to depart the stadium. Well, they used this now to get them in. After an initial rush, thousands of supporters entered the stadium steadily at a fast walk. When the gates were open, thousands of fans entered that narrow tunnel I just talked about. It created pressure at the front. Hundreds of people were pressed against one another, being wedged into that pen. People entering were unaware, obviously, of the problems of the fence. They didn't know they were coming in at the top. They didn't see what was going down at the fence. Well, down at the fence, they're literally faces crushed up against the fence and the fencing. So they didn't. The people at the top didn't know. The central pens had reached capacity. So they then directed fans to the side pens. But on this occasion, for reasons that's never been fully explained, they did not. A BBC News report conjectured that if police had positioned two police horses correctly, they would have been breakwaters, but didn't. The match did start at 3 p.m. on time. Fans were still streaming into those two pens, 3 and 4, from the rear entrance tunnel as the match began. Meanwhile, the ones at the front were getting pushed further and further into that fence. And a few people at the end of the pitch, then suddenly, you know, fans, the goalkeeper, Bruce Grabelar, reported the fans behind him were pleading for him for help because the situation was getting worse. And the match is already underway. The police first attempted to stop fans from spilling out of the pens because they thought it was a pitch invasion. 3:05 p.m., Peter Beardsley kicked a shot that struck Nottingham Forest goal bar, possibly connected to the excitement. A surge in pen 3 caused one of the metal crush barriers to give way, and people were thrust forward on top of one another and into the front fences. This is where they had problems. This is where people suffocated to death. Right. The South Yorkshire Police Superintendent, the ground commander, realized right away something was wrong, and he got a hold of the referee, and they stopped the match. Right away. By this time, a small gate in the fence had been forced open, and some of the fans were able to escape. Well, now the fans. Now this is where the next part comes in. Okay, now you've got people, I mean, you've got problems, you've got people dying, and so forth, okay? All right. Now everything has happened. There are 44 ambulances, Sean, that showed up. 44. They only let one go on to the pitch where the people were. One. 44 ambulances showed up. Only one got out there. Of the 96 people who died, Sean, only 14 made it to the hospital that day. Now let's get to the part that is takes a tragedy and makes it absolutely appalling. The police, when it was all said and done, blamed the Liverpool fans and said that alcohol and other factors caused this to happen. And they, two of the people in this, two of the six that were charged, are charged, by the way, with changing witness statements. Right? They put stories out there that some of the people vomited on police and urinated on police. In reality, because they were crushed to death, that's where the urine and the vomit happened, because of the incident, not because somebody did that. In reality, we now have electronic signage around soccer pitches around the world. Well, that used to be signage, not electronic. What the fans did was they took the signage, ripped it off, and used them as stretchers to get the injured out. 96 people were killed, 766 were hurt. You know, obviously in various... Right. They've done inquiries on this and so forth, but the bottom line is that one of the reasons that we lose trust in institutions is when the institution spins or lies or points the finger at someone else to take any onus off of them. You had 37 teenagers killed. The age range of those killed that day was between 10 and 67. Three sets of brothers died. Two sets of sisters died. A father-son combination died. People that never have not walked the earth since 1989. Their families, their friends have suffered the permanent loss. Now, they say the police negligence caused some of the tragedy. Okay? But it's how they acted in the aftermath, where they blamed the fans. And by blaming the fans, you know, hooliganism, okay, was not the reason. And that's why Hillsborough continues to be an incredible flashpoint, not only in England, but it should be closely watched here, because something that I want, whatever happens there, I want justice. To me, the justice system should be about truth and justice, right? It should not be about winning. The justice system should not be about winning. It should be about the truth, justice, and then a fair outcome, a correct outcome. It should never be about winning. We won. Okay, were you innocent or guilty? Well, if you're innocent, you won. You did win. But the justice system should not be about winning and losing. It should not be about spinning it so you can win or lose. And you also should not have, the justice system should also be about the rule of law and not mob rule. And sometimes a powerful entity can spin a case in such a way, or can, in the aftermath, spin something, because all the tabloids picked up on the police narrative. All the tabloids picked up on the police narrative. I mean, some of the headlines in the tabloids there from 1989, if you're a family member, they had to rip your guts out. They had to rip your guts out. Wow. I could do an entire segment just on what they, just on the headlines they wrote after the incident and how cruel they were to the Liverpool fans. Like I said, something, Sean, you know well about, so.
Well, one of the 96 that died, actually, that person was in a vegetative state and didn't pass away until 1993. But luckily, finally, yeah, after talking close to 30 years, at least some of the parents, especially for those young ones that that passed away, you know, that day, they finally could finally get a good night's sleep last night. Just that nightmare, it was night after night after night, day after day, just living through that tragedy of their, you know, friends and family being at that game that day. And really, that changed. I mean, since then, I mean, watching and being at any soccer facility in England, Cham, if you watch, and doesn't matter what level of English soccer you watch if you only just started watching the Premier League on the NBC networks within the last couple of years, you see there's no more fencing. There's no fencing around, you know, to keep between the seats in the field, you know, for security purposes.
Everybody has their own seat now.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, a lot of them was, you know, general admission and standing room. So now it's all, now they have those individual seats, just, you know, so it's much more safer to watch.
It's stunning. And when I started really reading into the tabloids, I mean, Sean, it becomes even more where it's sickening when you read. Now, I know it's 1989.
I believe, but it was, again, 25 years ago, I think, when, I believe it was 3 years ago when ESPN had the 30 for 30 to mark the 25th anniversary.
Right. Yeah. Right. The truth. Here's the sun. The truth. Some fans picked pockets of victims. Some fans urinated on brave cops. Some fans beat up PC giving kiss of life. None of it was true. Like, that's the front page of the Sun in 1989. I mean, and of course, the key was, how many papers can we sell? How many papers can we sell? I mean, when news becomes such a big business, where it's, you know, what can we go with instead of the news? But, and they weren't the only ones. I mean, there were others. You know, the Times, FHM, the Spectator, they all did the same thing. Amazing. All right, wrap it up in a moment. In fact, we'll get to the end here. News Radio 1070 WKOK.